Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respect to elders past and present and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today. Welcome to The Gayser Revolting, a definitive weekly news source for contemporary gays.
We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here to help you be the best G you can be.
You can follow us on Instagram at GaysRevoltingPod or join our Facebook group at The Gayser Revolting.
And if you'd like to support the podcast and listen to our after shows, head on over to patreon.com/GaysRevoltingPod for a heap of extra content.
Oh,
hello.
Hey everyone.
Welcome back, Luke.
All of us are here. Luke, we missed you last week.
I got a week off. Did you guys enjoy
what were you, I knew it was something social. What were you doing?
It's my one social outing a year.
Oh, yeah.
No, I had a birthday party and it was an important one.
Cute. Were you in the cake?
Well, I was the one that organized it. So I invited everybody.
Take off the podcast. Oh, God, just tell us. So.
It was so stupid. I invited everyone and I was like, it was a surprise party too. So I was like, don't tell anyone that you're coming. And it was one of my friends that reminded me a message and said, don't you record your show on Tuesday?
Yes, I do, Brenda.
And so, unfortunately, I missed last week, but Word of the Gay stepped in.
Yes, we had a great time with Word of the Gay.
Yeah, there was so much fun.
Exciting new stuff and heard some wonderful stories. But we should probably introduce ourselves for this week. I'm too cheap to buy new clothes, so instead I wear old clothes and call myself an environmentally conscious queen. My name's Thomas Jaspers.
And I just took a DNA test. Turns out I'm 100% that bitch, Kyle.
Oh. Well, I'm the crocodile that came up and bit that kid's guts out. His head went that way and his leg went that way.
That's the cutest.
My name's
ever.
Luke. That reference probably is,
you know,
lost.
That guy grew up, they did, so I think like the project
didn't get really hot.
Found him. Yeah, he's like a personal trainer or something.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, he had some training.
Oh, do you know who else was little and got into personal training? Is it Stuart Little? Like, you know the little boy from Stuart Little?
Yeah.
That's
Google
a mouse.
Pictures of him now.
Really?
And he's like some tank muscle man.
The only like kid that grew up that I'm interested in is Macaulay Culkin. He is fascinating. I love him.
Oh, he looks real methy.
I find him really attractive still. Yeah, even with that caved in nose, I still love him. But of course, the really exciting news this week that has got Australian gay social media a buzz
is that I'm going to Italy.
The announcement of the upcoming Australian RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah.
I mean, all the information that we have at the moment is that ITV have signed on to produce it. We have no date. We don't know who's hosting it or anything like that. But of course, gay social media has gone crazy, especially drag social media.
Boy.
Melbourne's Drag Awards are coming up this Monday. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, it's gone from like a quirky little fun night, like, sisterly night to like
everyone's
like gone out
up.
And yeah, stepping out because they're all thinking that there's going to be like talent scouts there.
Yeah,
and all
that sort of stuff.
I found it so hard because we talked to Karen from finance.
I do. Yeah. I want to say like we basically announced it on this show,
and it was so hard not to be that bitch on Reddit because I'm always on there. And I wanted to post that night and be like, "Nah, like, I've got the tea, sis. Yeah. I know this is going down." I as a huge fan of Drag Race Thailand, I'm much more excited for all of the spin-offs.
Yeah, all the international ones, so exciting.
Well, yeah, my problem has always been that RuPaul's Drag Race defines drag as such a it's got such a box of what drag is.
Yeah,
but I think that going to Thailand and the UK and now Australia, I'm actually really excited about it because they are going to start showcasing.
We'll become like
styles
Eurovision.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll be so cool. And it'll be so cool to see how like other people's cultures are integrated into their drag.
Yeah.
Australian drag would just be so funny, I think. Like Cap'n Kim, Lamingtons, like all weird shit.
Oh, God,
shit.
The Snatch Game's going to be Kim.
Yeah.
Oh, God. The amount of drag queens already fighting on Facebook over who's doing Cap'n Kim.
I've seen a lot of
amazing.
That.
I hope there's a good Julia Gillard in there or something like that. I think would be really
or
fun.
Or like Pauline.
Oh, Pauline Hanson would be amazing.
Pauline has had a big week.
Yes. Well. Oh, didn't she fly to Uluru?
Yeah, she did this big thing. Yeah.
She's provided a lot of material for, I think, the next season of Drag Race.
She really gives back.
Just to recap very quickly, Pauline Hanson, of course, shutting climbing of Uluru off to the general public because it's disrespectful to Indigenous people. Pauline Hanson disagrees with that, so she went to Uluru and did this big thing with the press where they filmed her climbing Uluru because you can still do it for the next few weeks, and then got stuck coming down. And there's great footage of her screaming, "I can't get down."
She also called herself Indigenous.
Yeah, an Indigenous person, and said to this like amazing Indigenous girl, "Oh, if my country's not Australia, what is it?" And this girl's like, "England."
Suck it.
But yes, Drag Race. I'm excited. Who do you want to see on there?
It's more I don't want to. This is controversial, but I don't want to see Courtney act.
Ooh. Yep.
Like I don't think it'll happen. Despite
I just
kind of
get the feeling
posts.
It's going to be Rue. It sounds more like it's going to be.
Do you think
like
Rue would be involved? Because RuPaul loves. I think you were saying when we had Karen that RuPaul loves Australia because his.
He's got a good knowledge of Australian culture and stuff. I mean, he's always like he's quoted Kath and Kim and.
Isn't his partner Australian?
Yeah, his partner's Australian, and I think he spends a bit of time here. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of funny because like all these queens are posting like their dream Australian lineup for RuPaul's Drag Race Australia, and they're posting like all these obvious ones like Art Simone and Filma Box and all those sorts of things.
I love like every time you say Filma
Box. It's such a good name, and of course those girls deserve to be on it, but of course they're not going to put all of the cream of the crop in the first season. You've got to say like that's, you know, if you look at the American ones, they've also got to find a few like ones that you're not expecting, and I'm enjoying sort of thinking of the one like because everyone's thinking of these scene queen drag queens, but there's always going to be like, you know, the ones that aren't necessarily always performing in the bars, but you know, your Dolly Diamonds or your Trevor Ashleys and those sorts of people who are very successful queens, but you know, do theatre performances and that sort of stuff.
Mm. When you're an established drag queen, this is actually going on a televised competition can actually do more damage to your career.
It can if you're doing that well. It'll be interesting too because, you know, even though this is the first season of Australia, it already carries such prestige here.
Yeah.
Did y'all watch the Meet the Queens videos for the UK season?
I saw the first few. Bag of Chips is so funny. Just the name.
Oh, well, all the names. I already can tell what type of season and how it's going to be different from American Drag Race because almost every name is a pun. There's like something
I'm so
Wong.
Upset because my drag name that I thought was so original that I came up with is like one of the queens.
What
of
is
the
it?
Show. Because I always said if I ever did drag, my drag name would be Crystal Beth. And there is a Crystal Beth. And I was like, I thought that was like, I thought I was so original with that, but apparently not.
But it looks like a good season. And the tea is that there's a bit more drama compared to the American. And I that's what I'm excited about too. I think the American show is so ingrained in like how social media impacts your career after you've been on the show. That the queens that are coming in on season 11, season 12, are so primed to like not actually get involved in anything controversial.
Yeah, interesting.
Whereas I think seasons of Drag Race Thailand, UK, and potentially Australia, we don't have that perceived knowledge yet of how the fan base is going to react.
Also, I think just the accents are going to make everything like 40 times funnier.
The thing I'm really excited about the UK Drag Race is that a lot of UK drag queens, at least in my experience, are ex-theatre performers.
I think you and I talked about this.
Yeah,
I remember you talking about it.
And so a lot of them, like their background is that they've studied theatre or music theatre or something like that and then gone into drag.
So that's totally up your alley.
Whereas a lot of the US ones, it's more about being a scene drag queen and then getting on stage and performing. They're not necessarily come from theatre trained backgrounds. So I think stuff like the stand-up, the snatch game, that sort of stuff is going to be completely different level to the US version.
Songs. Almost every queen was like, oh, I sing and I do a bit theatre and I dance and I can, you know, like almost every queen says.
I also love your UK accent.
I can't wait for that, absolutely. And this week we're actually joined by queer YouTuber Dutchy. So stick around for that. So as I was saying before, today we're joined by Megan Dykeman, better known as Australian YouTuber Dutchy. Thank you so much for coming in, Dutchy.
Thank you so much for having me.
So thrilled to have you here. Yeah. Now, the YouTube world is huge, and we've seen so many LGBTQIA+ people rise to prominence in that space. What inspired you to start making videos? Was it a need to have sort of a presence for other LGBT people?
Well, I actually started off because my dad has a big influence on, like, me, obviously, and he had his own wedding photography business.
Oh, yes. Oh.
So So yeah, he was really into the filming and like photography and editing. I was always watching him edit in the back room. And then, yeah, I've been making videos ever since I was a little girl. But I only started making LGBT content probably 2 years into YouTube. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I actually started making LGBT content because I was going through my own struggles.
Yeah.
I just started doing that because I thought, this might be relatable. And then it picked up and turned out it was really relatable.
And do you feel like it helped you when you were going on that journey and coming to terms with everything, the comments and the feedback that you're receiving on your videos? Was that something that helped you?
Really? Yeah. A lot. And a lot of the messages that I got even saying that it was really helping others and stuff, that really pushed me to keep creating that content that I do. Yeah.
Which is a beautiful thing, I guess, about YouTube and social media in general is that it's helping you to get through the stuff that you're processing, but it's also great
helping
for our
others.
Kids.
Yeah.
That might not have friends that they can talk to and stuff to see that stuff and realize that other people are going through it as well. So congratulations.
Yeah. Helping people
Thank you.
And popping up in that suggested field as well. YouTube makes things like accessible as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's super accessible.
It's kind of weird, but I feel like the internet knows when you're gay before you do sometimes.
Your suggested searches.
Yeah, like you could log into my YouTube account and suddenly say like, oh yeah, this is a homosexual. And I feel like if I was younger and had YouTube back then, it would start suggesting content to me to really help form my sort of worldview.
Unfortunately, in our day, darling, it was the Blockbuster video. Was
they
didn't have like a suggested LGBTI videos thing at the Blockbuster.
The closest
store.
We had was like the Thriller section of Blockbuster, where they have like wild things
or the back room,
and like sexy VHS tapes. So we do this podcast, and Dan luckily edits it for us because
our
wonderful
producer. Yeah,
it is a shit ton of work to edit something together, and I know that video work takes a lot more than that. Piecing things together, making sure the shots are right, etc. I'm not sure that people really know how much time and effort actually goes into. How long does it take you to put together like a single video?
I honestly wish people knew. Like, I understand. Yeah, a lot. So one video, it depends what I'm filming.
Yeah.
It can take anywhere between an hour and 2 hours to film, probably an extra 2 hours to edit and thumbnail, and then probably an extra half an hour to upload. So probably 5 to 6 hours for one video.
And lucky you're already pretty, because if we were trying to make, if this was a visual podcast and we were trying to make Luke look pretty, it would be a lot of work.
I tried to start a YouTube like years ago then realized, no, this is not the
that's,
thing.
Yeah, that's daunting.
You've got to get into audio.
It's a lot. You just,
So, Dutchie, your videos that focus on like bisexual issues, they get a lot of views.
Yeah.
Is it important that you're creating content that specific members of the community can like really connect with?
Yeah, definitely. And I've found like those videos are, as you said, the ones that do best. Mm. I think when you're really open and raw about your own struggles and things you've gone through, that's when people can relate the most. And I think that's why. And because I know even within the community, there is biphobia. Like there's much of
Absolutely.
It.
Right? Biasure,
Yeah. So it's so important to like talk about it a lot more because people still ignore it or push it away and say like it doesn't exist, that sort of thing. Yeah, like
it is awful seeing people in the LGBT community
like turning on each other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or even just dismissing that somebody's sexuality exists.
Yeah, it's like
I don't understand how someone in the community who has already been through their
gone through
own
all
process,
the struggles
exactly,
and then
can turn and say to somebody else. So it's fantastic weird. That you're creating content and putting it out there where you unashamedly talk about yourself and your bisexual starter pack, which I thought was a fantastic one.
Thank you.
Obviously very tongue in cheek. Yeah. But a great way of just sort of saying, we are absolutely here and we can have a laugh as well, but we are here.
Yeah. I owned a lot of the clothes in that video. Yeah. I was like, wait, am I?
I'm so glad to hear that. I'm so glad.
Are you bisexual?
How do you decide what queer messages you want to promote to your channel? Like, what are the ones, how do you decide what stands out to you and what's important to work into your messaging?
Honestly, I ask my followers.
Okay.
So when I started out, I used to ask, okay, guys, what do you want to see? And I'd get like one response. And now I get like 50 to 100 responses. Yeah. So I just go through them and like pick the most that people say. And like a lot of my videos, you'll probably notice, are very similar. Yeah. And I just sort of keep repeating it because that's sort of what you need to do with a
niche.
Driving
the message home.
Yeah.
So I really just listen to the subscribers because they're obviously, at the end of the day, they know what they want to see. They know what they want to learn or hear about. So.
And do you also take influence from other YouTubers?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Who?
Like Shannon Beveridge and Ali Hills. I used to focus a lot like with topics of taboo. I used to get a lot of inspiration from her. Any of those sort of LA LGBT YouTubers for sure.
And have you sort of created a bit of a network with them?
No. I wish.
We'll tag them.
It's so huge. I've met Amy Ordman in person. She was so sweet. Not that I haven't tried. But I just feel like I'm still so tiny.
I'm sure that they would be thrilled to hear from you and would love to work with you.
That'd be a dream.
Just don't get
into
like any makeup wars with anyone.
Oh, no, that won't be happening. That will not be happening.
Yeah. I was going to say, have you been involved in any vlogger drama?
No.
Because that's a great way to
That's
like,
a great way to get,
get engagement.
People know
you are then. No, I haven't. Not yet.
Well, we'll start some tonight.
Yeah. Is anyone
if you want us to start rumors, we're
I think that's a part of the appeal is because YouTube, we've mentioned, YouTube didn't really exist when we were younger. And looking at it now, I see like, oh, this is something you can really get invested in because there's these relationships with other vloggers as well. Mm. And you kind of, it's like, I remember when you had to pick the Spice Girls or All Saints when you were a kid and you know, it's like its own world. So I think I would recommend getting involved in some drama.
Some drama.
This is a too personal question, please don't answer it. But would you describe yourself as a sort of a introverted person in your personal life?
No.
You're an introvert? No.
Yeah, so like I'm one of those people, I know how you see a lot of YouTubers and then they talk about their social anxiety and all that. Like I get anxiety a little bit, but no, if you ask any of my closest friends or my housemates, I'm the loudest.
On camera
I'm exactly the same. Right. I'm exactly the same.
Oh, that's so interesting. Because I think it was when he was speaking to Christian Hull. He was, he was describing
really
himself as
quite
Yeah. No, I'm loud. Yeah.
Actually, I saw a lot of this on Twitter a few months ago where members of the LGBT community were upset because they believed that there was some prejudice happening with YouTube and the content that they were banning. Mm. So they were highlighting certain accounts that were getting away with practically hate speech and not getting taken down, but then videos by queer YouTubers was getting blocked because of explicit content.
You often see similar things on Instagram and other platforms as well.
It was mainly coming from American bloggers and Twitter users that I was seeing it. But do you think that's impacted the Australian YouTube scene at all?
I don't know many other LGBT YouTubers in Australia, or at least not the content that I create.
Yeah.
But that's quite funny that you mentioned that because I was speaking to my manager about it the other day because I uploaded a video last week that had the term bisexual in the title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was demonetized.
Oh. Really?
But a month ago or 2 months ago, I did a video that was how I knew I was bisexual and it's fully monetized. So YouTube's actually only, just picked up on bisexual as a word that they're going to.
Wow.
So, that's pretty bad.
Huh. So it's definitely going to start affecting Australian YouTubers. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And for us that are not entirely computer savvy or too old to the YouTube game, monetizing and demonetizing, can you explain that a bit?
If a video becomes demonetized, it just means that it's not suitable for most advertisers. So you can't place ads or companies can't place ads on your video, meaning you can't get
revenue from
those videos. Yeah.
How is the revenue?
What
bank you want?
No, seriously, ask away. Obviously, I'm tiny still. Like, I only make between.
I wouldn't say tiny. I wouldn't say tiny.
Well, compared to.
Is this your main source of income?
No, not yet.
But you've got tens of thousands of subscribers, am I right? 50,000, is that correct?
Nearly 50,000.
Nearly 50,000, and then 20,000 on Instagram.
Yeah.
That's a pretty chunky size. Good money, then I'd be pissed off.
Yeah. I'm getting between, like, honestly, a good month would be 500.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah.
A bad month, 350.
Yeah. So. And do you have merch?
Not yet.
Okay. Oh, that's good. I'll buy some merch.
Yeah.
I stupidly wanted to ask, with the monetized videos, do you get to pick where the ad is played? Okay. Because that drives me so crazy.
It's always the most integral part of the video. Yeah. And, like, and then it's like,
it's clever.
Adverts started now. I'm like, merch.
It's like, I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
I saw it because I was like, surely it's not by chance that it's like happening now.
Yeah.
Well, so you never used to be able to. You used to just place them at the start and at the end, and you used to have no other choice. Mm. Now on videos over 10 minutes, you can place however many you want, which is if you see Jake or Logan Paul, they do one every 2 minutes.
Yeah, right.
No wonder they're, you know.
Yeah,
I only do max two because I don't want to be that person, but I also want to make money. So
if the video's going for less, like if it's running at 9:30, do you quickly put an extra 30 seconds in? So
no.
I'm just going to fold my laundry for a little bit.
I'm just going to sit here and not talk. Yeah.
I'm just going to recap everything I said in the last...
Yeah.
So, Duchy, spill. How has being on YouTube affected your dating life?
Honestly, my dating life is probably the only thing I keep private.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Like, I will share anything, pretty much all of them know everything about me, even like my sexual experiences, just everything. But in terms of what's going on in my life, like right now, like no one knows, apart from my close friends, no one knows because, I think that's something that I want to keep private.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. Do you find the people that you meet are already fans of you and know who you are? Or do you tend to go for people who are kind of just have oblivious to it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The second one. No one knows who I am. Like,
Do you have people reaching out online asking on dates and that sort of thing?
No. Really? I get a lot of like, it's all advice questions. I do get all the time, what's the youngest age you would date? And I'm like, because a lot of my subscribers are very young.
Right.
Well, my demographic's 18 to 24. Like the massive chunk is 18 to 24. But obviously there is some younger people in there. And they're always like, how?
It's great that they've got someone that they can sort of see and reach out to as well. Yeah. Though. That's fantastic. And that you're happy to answer those questions. I saw in your videos that you saying that you respond to absolutely everybody that asks for advice and that sort of thing. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
A lot of people, once they sort of get to the level of 50,000 subscribers or 20,000 on Instagram, are a little bit too busy to be reading through all of the messages. So on you for going through all that.
We got our first nude sent to our main account on Instagram recently. Do people send you nudes?
On Tumblr, but I don't think that comes from
Is Tumblr still YouTube. Around?
I think it just comes from being Tumblr.
Just send nudes on.
No, not yet.
Oh.
I'm glad.
Now, you're appearing at VidCon Australia at the end of September. For those who don't know, what is VidCon and what can YouTube fans expect?
VidCon is insane. It's like a YouTube convention and you can just go and meet all your fave subscribers, hang out with them, go to their panels, meet and greets, all of that sort of thing. It's
booths
sick.
And everything?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's
and do they have a lot of internationals come in for that too?
They do.
Amazing. Is this your first VidCon?
It's my first going as a creator. What the heck?
Congratulations.
Oh. Yeah. This is huge. Literally. Oh, I can't. Yeah. I still can't.
Where is it?
Melbourne Convention Centre.
Oh, huge.
Yeah.
Massive.
Yeah.
Congratulations. So. You going to do some networking, meet some of you?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Start some drama.
Yeah.
Exactly. Create some content.
Yeah.
Yep.
Us members of the LGBT are big on our networking.
Oh yeah.
It's like one of my skills.
Isn't it one of the options on Grindr?
Yeah, it is.
I'm just here for networking.
Yeah. I was actually looking at it the other day and I love the dichotomy between like networking right now, friends, and like long term relationship. Yeah. Like, how can
That's
you
the
be
four
looking?
Modes of gaming?
Tom is always best networking at Wedding Wellington.
It just amazes me that you can be looking for those four very disparate things in the same place. With VidCon coming up and networking, I know like even right now, crossovers are big.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anyone you're looking out for at VidCon for potential crossovers and networking? And
at the moment, there's not really anyone in my niche. So like I would never collaborate with someone purely to grow. Well, if they were in my niche, then 100%. Mm-hmm. But there's no one going that I'm sort of at the moment like, yeah, I'd love to work with them. Of course, I'd want to meet with them and be their bestie. But not really, but that is a massive thing. Like VidCon, that is a massive thing, and a lot of people do that, especially people in the same niche and like people that do want to often do that. And like, that's what happens. You sort of go, and obviously you stay in a hotel, and all the feature creators like are on the same level in the hotel, so you can do collabs and stuff. It makes it super easy to do that. So yeah, absolutely.
Ooh, exciting.
The pheromones would be in the air.
Because
I go to like Comic-Con and PAX at the convention center, and you can smell it in the air.
Oh, really?
You're like, someone's hooking up somewhere.
Yeah.
So you can catch Dutchy at the convention center at VidCon. It's the 19th to the 22nd of September in Melbourne. Dutchy, can you let our listeners know where people can follow you and check out your videos?
You guys can find me on YouTube as Dutchy. That's a little bit more complicated for my Instagram and Twitter because of my last name. So it's at Megan Dykman. I don't know if y'all want me to spell it.
Spell it. It's not phonetically.
Okay, it's MEGANDIJKMAN.
We actually had a conversation before you arrived being like, who's going
to say it? Yeah, I was like, I'm going to fuck this up.
Who's going to get it wrong?
Yeah. Dutchy, thanks so much for coming in and joining us. It's been a real treat to have you here and can't wait to see your future content and see you at VidCon.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for having
me. It's been a fun interview. Can we play you out with like Pass That Dutch?
Totally. Oh, that's the other thing I just, sorry to blow this out. So one of my colleagues was like, Dutchie is like this big term in the female biker community.
Oh.
Where they're like Dutchie, like, but with double E. And she's like, is it the same thing? And so we Googled Urban Dictionary Dutchie, and there are numerous interpretations. Dutchie can be, let's go use your mum's car and have a Dutchie, which is like a hot box.
Oh, yeah.
When okay.
You, yeah. So that's
future video.
Dutchie.
And then also a joint with cardboard.
Oh, yeah.
It's called a Dutchie. It's also a adjective for like a busted up home as well. They said, oh, like Carl's place is looking real Dutchie.
Oh, oh my Lord.
People like still call me Dutchie, but that's just because my grandparents are Dutch.
And I think it describes Dutch people as well. But the more you know.
The more you know. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I want to talk to you guys about the census. Now, I know it's not a very exciting topic.
I'm excited.
But I'm fascinated by it. Do you guys follow the Australian Bureau of Statistics on Twitter?
Avidly.
They actually post interesting stats every now and then, and it all comes from the census. Every 5 years, they hold a census where they ask every citizen a whole lot of questions about their life and their living conditions and that sort of thing.
And it's compulsory.
It is compulsory. Oh. And Australia's census is considered one of the most extensive in the world.
When was the last one then?
3 years ago was the last one.
I don't remember doing it.
Well, then you broke a law.
Okay. Am I going to jail?
Definitely. The government spends a huge amount of money and effort to make sure they capture as many citizens as possible on census night. So you can do it electronically or through paper, but in the olden days when it was only paper, and when I say the olden days, I mean living there memory, they would have to make sure hotels had the census form because everyone had to do it on the same night, or at least you had to fill it out for the night that it was announced for. So even if you did it the next day, you had to fill it out saying of where you spent the night and that sort of thing. Like it's specifically for that night. So they can say on this night, on this date, this is what everyone was doing
and where
they
were living
and that sort of thing. And they even send people out into Indigenous communities and that sort of thing to make sure that they're capturing information from people in remote areas.
Wow.
Interestingly though, in Australia, we don't ask people their sexual preferences or gender identity on the census. There's a lot of arguments as to whether we should do it or whether we shouldn't do it. The reason it's sort of come into conversation now is that a huge list of Australian medical organisations have released a statement recommending that it be included on the 2021 census, which is the next one coming up. Mm. Obviously, one of the reasons that these medical organisations want to include statistics about people's sexual preferences and gender identity is because it then means they can focus efforts and resources areas, in certain areas. Exactly, yeah.
Like, I'm an old tinfoil hat wearer from way back. Like, I don't like giving the government anything.
Yeah.
I'm like constantly in incognito mode on my computer.
I think I agree with that.
Really?
But when it comes to this, and from my professional history as well, I have a very different viewpoint.
Yeah.
Because we've talked about mental health and the LGBT community on the show, and I generally refer back to the same two or three reports that have been done in the past 10 years because that's all that's really out there.
Yeah.
I feel like in this day and age where there's a lot of dangerous rhetoric being thrown around and a lot of hate speech being paraded as like political opinions. When it comes to those arguments, the only way to fight back is with cold, hard statistics.
Absolutely,
You cannot beat this battle with empathy or with feelings or anything like that. You need the cold, hard numbers.
But for me, I think it's scary with a government and like the US government in the way that they are now. They're not really the biggest fans of the gays. And I feel weird about giving information that I'm gay to them because then they can find me.
Yeah. So the way a true census properly works. Yeah. I know that there's probably some dodgy countries that do some dodgy stuff with some dodgy information. But I mean, the Australian government can't keep a leader for more than a few months. They're not that organized to find your census.
That's very true.
But the way a true census works is that your name is not attached to any data.
Oh,
your name is ticked off to make sure that you've done the census.
Yeah.
But so they tell us. There's not a file somewhere that has Kyle Dowsett's responses saying, oh, Kyle Dowsett owns this. But your answers are connected to each other.
Yeah.
So it's given a number so that they can say, well, you know, a person living in this part of Melbourne is statistically likely to have this kind of job and this kind of income. And,
and be gay.
There's a gay in there. I know it. Come out.
But it will be interesting for that sort of thing. I think it's really interesting when we look at these sorts of things. The only reason it's not on there is because it never has been. So each year they pretty much copy all of the questions that they've had from previous, the last one, and then they go, what else do we need to add into this? And so, you know, so there's questions that wouldn't have been relative 50 years ago that have been added in over the last 50 years, and so on and so forth. So once we add it in there, it hopefully will stay in there and that sort of thing, if we decide it's the right thing
to do. That's interesting, because a lot of people can't even admit their sexuality to themselves. Yeah. So other people, are you locked into that? Like, because I know a lot of people, people evolve. Well, like, a lot of people,
but again,
like,
it's grow about and change. When they use census statistics, they're talking about what people's position or status was at the time that the census was taken.
Okay.
Yeah. So then they use it to compare. So they can say, in this area of Melbourne, in the last census, the people were earning this much, but now they're earning this much.
At
so it's become a more
time.
Affluent area, or jobs have been lost in this rural area. And we can know that because the census says that statistically people are earning less money in this area and that sort of stuff.
It sounded like you were worried people were going to hold you to it.
Yeah.
Like,
you must have gay sex.
No, because I was just going to say, sexuality is so fluid nowadays.
Absolutely.
I bet that would be a really big problem for a lot of people, because being constricted by what they are giving you to tick in like each box.
Well, that's also an important statistic to be able to capture.
Yeah, that's
changing.
Also, they're going to need a really long form for like all the different...
Well, you write it in. Yeah. It's like when, I think a few years ago, there was a big joke about how you could list yourself as a Jedi as your chosen religion.
Yeah, which is actually shat me. Like, I know it was like a thing of people trying to be cool and funny.
I know, but it's like taking a piss and then it's like real.
Yeah,
bit, like,
so then
real
we had
issues.
something like 6% of Australians identified as Jedi as their religion.
Yeah,
and it's like, well, no, this is actually an important tool that needs. To be used in order to make sure we're putting the right resources in the right places and that sort of thing. One thing that I'm really interested in seeing if they do introduce this for the 2021 census is finding out about this mythological 10%. I think we've all heard
10% of the population.
We've been told. I remember at school it was like 1 in 10 people is gay, so 3 people in this class must be gay, and then going around and working out which of the 3, which was always me.
Yeah, it's like, well,
just
you're
me,
all three.
Me, I'm all three. Yeah,
there's 3 terms.
But so that 10% was first used, interestingly, by Alfred Kinsey, who invented the Kinsey scale, who we discussed about in the live show. But it's been argued against a lot that this 10% exists. And also the 10% used to be, he said it was gay, but now it's used to say LGBTQIA+. So it'd be really interesting to see what that actual statistic is.
Yeah, do you think it'd be a lot more than 10%?
I think in certain areas, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, have you guys been to like a Mardi Gras parade?
Yeah, exactly.
There's more than 10%.
Imagine if they held it on Mardi Gras night, that would really skew the statistics towards Sydney.
I think it'd be less, but I want to know how much I've fucked through.
How many you've been through?
Yeah.
You want to know different percentage. You want to know what's
to come.
I want to
know, how much of it I've fucked up already. Because if we're going off like some places recorded
it's the whole pie.
as low as like 4%. Yeah. And in that case, I've got a very sad future ahead of me.
They do ask in America about sexual identity, which is an interesting thing, because a lot of people in the millennial age bracket had much higher instances of identifying as LGBTQIA+.
Yeah, I think in the US one, when they measure it, they only measure your sexual orientation if you're in a relationship. So
I believe
only...
that's what they're going to do in the next one, but there's controversy in the US because from now on, they're not going to be asking, do you identify as LGBTQIA+.
It's just if you're in a relationship or not.
So they're
find that they have a lot more lesbians than gays.
But the American statistics are an interesting thing to look at because of the age bracket thing. Overall, in 2012, the results from America had 3.5% of Americans identifying as LGB or T. And then in 2016, it was 4.1%. So it rose by 0.6 of a percent.
Yeah.
I don't think that the actual amount of people who identify as LGB or T rose.
Yeah.
I think it's people who are willing to tick that box on a form rose in that span of time, which then sort of opens up how do you ask the question. So the question that they ask in America was, do you personally identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender? And that's where people start to have an issue with this, because it's not a hard data census question.
Yeah, because then what even counts as homosexuality? Well, can I go to your history?
Exactly.
Is it just like if I slept with the guy once in 19 whatever?
Exactly.
And then, 19 whatever.
Sorry, I was just speaking for Tom.
1902. Yeah. We're on the Titanic. It's true though. And also, are you in a position to be able to tick that box? A lot of people will have the family sitting around the table.
Everyone's like, definitely straight.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are going to be guys that are, you know, might be heterosexual men or publicly identify as heterosexual that are married, who are actually, in fact, bisexual, who aren't comfortable ticking that box in front of their wife or teenagers living at home might want to not.
That'd be so uncomfortable.
So it's the problem for me is the wording of the question, saying, do you personally identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender? Well, I've got two problems. One of them is that. Because if you're asking, what is your income? That's a hard data fact that you can answer. If you're asking, what is your age? Mm-hmm. How many kids do you have? Do you have a disability? What is your ethnic background? These are hard data facts. Mm. But whether or not you identify as something is very much as to whether you're comfortable saying that.
Yeah.
So I think the question should be, do you openly identify as blah, 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 blah? Would be a more truer statistic.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Hopefully the online option alleviates some of that,
but I don't think it would fully.
Because I see it on Catfish all the time.
Didn't they cancel that? Weren't you like devastated?
We'll get to that later.
Okay, we'll get to that later. Totally that's the next topic.
But I see it on Catfish a lot where people explore their sort of sexuality online because it is a space where they can detach from their day-to-day lives, or there's some privacy there for them. That I totally remember doing the paper forms with my family,
and which you still can do.
I would never opt to do that ever again in my life. I think the online option hopefully helps out. It's a tricky thing to word, because I'm sure it goes through 50 different checks. It's not census person one writing it. You know that they must have to sign off from so many different parties and get it worded in such a particular way.
I would just hate for us to be looking at a statistic and saying, oh well, no one in this rural area identified as LGBT or I, so that means we don't need to put any resources there. I think we should be looking and going, well, no one openly identifies.
Totally. So what can we do about that?
How can we, you know, create services or whatever in those areas so that people who are not comfortable coming out about their sexual identity or gender identity.
Yeah, you would hope the people that are pushing for this option to be included in the census have some sensitivity and awareness of the struggles and the unique difficulties of the LGBT.
You would hope so, but we will still have a Liberal government by the time the next census comes around. So I'm not
about. So it kind of does contradict what I was saying before, because members of the Liberal Party and extremely conservative types can turn any statistic into a straw man argument.
Yeah.
And kind of say, well, sure, you have X amount of LGBT people in a certain area, but
there's always a but.
You know, that figure's skewed because of X, Y, and Z. I just hope it's used the other way as well by a more sympathetic party.
Yeah.
To be able to say there are unique circumstances to being a member of our community that can skew data, and we see it in mental health, and we see it in health in general, and how people reach out to services and use them, and their visibility in day-to-day life is all affected by that.
I still feel tinfoil hatty. Like I don't want to give this information to people that I feel I might do a bad thing.
The funny thing is, you're on so many different social media.
I know.
Things.
I was like, I'm on a fucking podcast called The Gays Are Revolting. They'll never find me. But I guess I've got 2 years until 2021 to decide.
What your
just around the corner.
It's like we all saw The Handmaid's Tale.
Literally, I think that is what's sticking in my mind. Like, oh God, like, what do they call them? Gender traitors.
My other concern about this questioning, though, is that being gay and being transgender are such completely different things. We are in a community because we're outcasts from mainstream. And so we've sort of banded together and created this sort of union of people that are attracted sexually to
gender traders,
if you will,
And also gender diverse people, because it's because we're on the fringes of mainstream society. But yeah. when we're looking at what resources those community groups need, it's very different things. And I think making the one question, "Are you LGBTI?" actually doesn't give you that useful data.
Just group it all into one.
And they're also not mutually exclusive. So you can be gay and transgender. You can be straight and transgender.
Yeah,
you
so
can
true.
Be bisexual and transgender. So I think it really needs to be two different questions. Do you publicly identify as gay, lesbian, and bi? And then separately, do you identify as transgender or gender diverse? Because it's important that we're getting both of those
bits
of data.
Definitely if you carry on questions from that. It's not as easy as just kind of like one question.
Yeah, are you part of this LGBTI community? I mean, that'll be helpful for where to plan the next Pride Parade.
Yay.
But aside from that, when we're looking at divvying up resources and stuff, it's a very different question.
That's really interesting because it does touch on what we've talked about before, which is like infighting between the letters. Mm. And I could see the argument to be made, well, they should all be separated because the services that the individual members of our community require are so different to one another, as opposed to just plonking the gender aspect, you know.
Yeah, the census definitely needs a few more pages.
I could see that being a can of
Yeah, I mean, I worms. Think that it's fairer to sort of put sexual preference together and gender identity together as sort of being the two major separations in that jumble of letters.
Yeah.
If it was my way, it would be like, write your own synopsis in here, like a blank box where I can say, well, this is how I identify.
Let me tell you a story.
Let me tell you something. It all started
Luke was a little boy
in 1986. But unfortunately, it's probably not going to be that way for a very long time. I think it's a positive start
to get
the sort of groundwork, base work data, and then you refine it from there. So we're a little late to the party on this one, but I always like an opportunity to talk about pop music so I can swerve it over to Charlie XCX.
Oh, good, I'll have an app.
Inevitably. But there's been a lot of news about Lil Nas X, an American rapper who has just broken a record for his number one song, Old Town Road.
Yeah, that plays on everything.
I actually love it. I'm so
I do like it, but it's so rare
that you guys mention a recent song and I've heard it, but I actually love it. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, and there's so many remixes as well.
Look, a lot of people love it because it's been at number one in the US for 17 weeks now. So it's now the longest leading number one single by a queer artist in Hot 100 history.
That's amazing.
That's like surpassing Elton John's Candle in the Wind.
It's pretty fucking...
beat Mariah Carey.
It's pretty fucking incredible to overtake like the tribute song for Princess Diana. Wow. Like that is amazing.
That's with this song as well.
Yeah.
Like I don't know if you country rappy song.
The thing I find really interesting about this is that it's kind of an intersection of a lot of different things happening at the same time. Not to get all theoretical on it, but you have a queer person of color making country music and rap music.
Yeah.
And achieving a level of mainstream success. I don't think anyone really
those two crowds are generally known for loving gays or people of color, like for country music people.
Well, that's the thing that's so interesting. Yeah. Like there's a lot of queer male rappers that I follow that have just not been able to replicate or reach this kind of success ever. I was seeing tweets about it and didn't even connect the dots that this was the same thing as like Leaf or Big Freedia, you know. It just didn't connect to me that someone had, a person of color for one, had achieved such success in demographics that aren't very supportive of them at all.
Yeah.
I started thinking about other artists and who have sort of been in this space, and the only one I could think of is like Frank Ocean.
Yeah, I was going to say.
As well, getting a lot of mainstream coverage. He really pushed that boundary of hip-hop music and homosexuality. Like, that is such a tense relationship there.
Rap really has like a brand of homophobia. Like we were, I think last week's episode, you weren't here for it, but in our after show, we were discussing homophobic celebrities, and a lot of them that we were mentioned were rappers.
Yeah.
It became popular. Yeah. I think the age of like Eminem and that era of rap really popularized like overt homophobia in
they love
hip-hop.
The F word.
Like, I don't think it really was as prominent before then in like old school hip-hop and rap, but homophobia became a brand yeah. with Eminem, and mm. it sort of picked up from there. And the thing that really interests me about Frank Ocean is he came from the Odd Future Collective, which is yeah. a hip hop and rap collective in America, which has Tyler the Creator.
Oh, yeah,
Tyler. And a number of other rappers. And I heard their music first. Mm-hmm. And some of it, like Goblin by Tyler, the Creator, made me really uncomfortable as a gay man mm-hmm. because they did use the F word in some of those yeah. tracks. And to hear that a openly LGBTI artist had come out of that collective
yeah.
and then won like Album of the Year in a number of places really kind of blew my mind, that I thought maybe this relationship isn't as black and white as we kind of perceive it to be, that it's men making Kill the Fags rap music and white dudes making Kill the Homos country music. The reality is much, much blurrier than that. But you liked the song.
I thought it was a fantastic song.
It's a good song.
The video clip is stunning as well. I mean, he's stunning. So
he was on the cover of Time.
All right.
He's like, he's just like gone full gay now.
Yeah. I think it's a beautiful song. It's a beautiful mash of two different styles. And I can definitely see why it's been as popular as it has been.
I like that also because a few people were getting up him that it wasn't country enough, so they took him off the charts for country. And then what he did was like, fuck you, and he got Billy Ray Cyrus onto his track. Right. To like featuring on it, so then to country it up, so and then he like
Miley's dad. Again.
Miley's dad, he's still around apparently.
Yeah,
but that was really smart, I think.
The thing I wanted to ask you guys is, do you feel like this song is potentially quite palatable for a queer audience? Because just a few weeks ago, we discussed like what makes queer cinema, what makes queer films queer films. And I hate to like praise Troye Sivan because I fucking hate that guy.
I love it. Don't say that.
As palatable as his music is, at least things like Bloom had this like subliminal queer messaging in it. It was about bottoming. And Lil Nas X has been pretty upfront that no, this song's just about riding a horse.
It's literally and he had to clarify that. I think on Twitter he's like, it's definitely just riding
a horse. It's his responsibility to have to write make a song every about song boarding, like, bottoming, you know. I think it's just incredible that he's written a song that he wanted to write, and he is a queer person of color, and that the society is evolving to a point where you can be a queer person of color and write a song that's be respected just as much as if it was a straight guy or a white guy or whatever, that we're no longer caring about who makes the music, we're caring about the music itself.
Yeah.
So I get what you're saying, where it would be nice if there were some other messages in there, but
he does have a song
required to do that.
So that song's really popular, but he has a song that he came out with,
right,
which is called Closure, and the L is a seven. And then I also found out that seven is because the seven colors in the rainbow. And he had this whole
post online. Well, he snuck like a pride flag into
his album. And then I think he tweeted a photo of him pointing at the flag,
like, saying, why you all know about this already? I tried to come out so many times.
Actually, I listened to the song today. I actually really like it.
Like, I get what you're saying, Tom, but I wonder if we at a point where we no longer need representation, and like we need people to be making those
I think we do need it still. I don't think we need to celebrate when someone accomplishes something like this.
For me, it puts it into the like hooray for you territory because I'm just like, because
you're a miserable cunt.
I look at it and go like, you've achieved this incredible success, hooray for you. I don't like the song personally.
That's okay. You're not required to like it.
Yeah. Objectively, I know in my head, if he had released a 13-minute like abstract soundscape about douching with like Inuit throat singers, like,
no pun intended,
he's probably not going to hit number one and break any records. Yeah. Would that be an amazing like artistic...
He's easing the crowd, like the audience, into it.
He's pulling a Björk where you start a pop and then you go crazy. I understand that. I understand you can't achieve this level of success by being weird.
But he should also just be making the music he wants to make. So I hope that it's just that this is the song he wanted to make, and he hasn't necessarily mean that he's stopped himself from writing about bottoming. It's just that song wasn't in him.
And like, because he's just recently come out, like his next album might really dive into that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I want it now though.
Now. She's impatient.
Well, you're just going to have to listen to Troye Sivan until it comes. I'm sorry, darling.
Gosh. I can't believe that I actually praise Troye Sivan.
I love Troye Sivan. You leave Troye alone. Troye Sivan.
South African. My fellow gay South African.
Is it because he reminds you too much of Kyle?
It's just like that exact representation of being a gay male that I've seen my entire life.
So hang on a second. So Troye Sivan is singing about his personal life, and you don't
Tom,
like that.
You should know you can't make Luke happy.
Lil Nas X isn't singing enough about his personal life, and then you don't like that either.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Cool.
Agreed.
Absolutely. I look at Leaf, who's working. Sorry to just like throw a lot of incomprehensible bullshit out there, but Leaf is working with Sophie, who's like a trans, hardcore electronic producer.
Yeah.
And no one's hearing that. And those songs are overtly
We need more of that sort of stuff. But like we've said before, like we need to take... Unfortunately, the world can't just jump into...
And it's also, I think, different people's journeys. Like, you don't, like, they don't owe anybody to, like, I have to have this giant coming out. Like, he didn't even want to come out.
He did the way he wanted.
And it was just... Yeah. He was really inspired by Pride.
And I hope it does lead to people like Leaf and... Who was this person you're talking about? I don't know anything about pop music. But whoever this wonderful trans pop artist is, Sophie, I hope that this does lead to people like that being... on the top of this billboard for 17 weeks. But just because he's not as out there as you'd like.
Like I said, hooray for him. Yeah. I like have no bad blood on the record against Little Nas. And I think it's great, but
tune in next week when we have Lil Nas on the show. Special guest.
it's just not what I look for in
that's fair enough.
Queer representation and queer music.
I mean, I'm not a huge Elton John fan, but I think he's done some pretty amazing stuff as well.
I became a fan of him after we went to the screening of that movie. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah. So we've made it to the end of another tumultuous episode.
So lovely to have all three of us back in the studio.
Yeah, and to have Dutchie was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Thanks so much to Dutchie for coming on and joining us.
Yeah.
Luke, you're guesting on Lip's new podcast, Sinister Sissies.
I'll be joining Jared to talk about a couple of gay serial killers.
Ooh, and amazing.
He's like, Luke is the first one I'm talking
about. Yeah, basically all the stuff I don't say on this show
is what you get to
is
say on that
what
one.
I say
There's first. Not a lot you don't say on this show.
I know, believe it or not, there is stuff.
I love that they were thinking, oh, we need someone to talk about gay psychopaths. Let's get Luke in.
Ding, ding, ding.
Talk about what you know.
Yeah. Oh, and also, I won't be here for the next 2 weeks.
You're going on your
trip. So in T-minus 2 days, I'm flying to Italy. My first time in Europe. Very excited. Little family holiday.
Are you going to go see your mum, yeah?
Yeah, I haven't seen her in like 2 years.
So. Gorgeous. With your brother.
We are losing hosts.
I wonder if they'll bother opening Puffdorf while you're not here.
They'll make no money. But before I leave, we're actually going to be discussing intimacy in our after show this week.
Yes. You're so good at it. You could barely pronounce.
So good.
And what kind of intimacy stuff will we be talking about, Kyle?
Like physical intimacy. And emotional intimacy.
Spiritual
intimacy.
You want to ask us what it's like in case it ever happens to you?
Yeah. Please, like anyone's ever going to get with you guys anytime soon. Like, I'm the most experienced.
Well, if anyone wants to listen to our Patreon, you can head over to patreon.com/gaysrevoltingpod and sign up. It's only $6 a month. I'm sorry that we have to charge it in US dollars, by the way. We've never really apologized for that. It's just, that's what the
that
website
was my
does.
Decision. US,
dollar.
I wanted it in US currency.
I requested South African rand.
It's only six US dollars a month, and you get a bonus little mini episode every week. So you can sign up there.
What a pleasure.
Until then, don't forget to follow us on our socials, and we love you. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.